From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, at the television upfronts, even after firing Les Moonves, CBS renews a series whose star was accused of sexual harassment, for which the network paid a multi-million dollar settlement. Then, when the creators of the Hulu series Pen 15 first tried to sell their comedy about middle school, they were met with a fair amount of resistance.
We got a lot of, I'm nauseous, I don't want to go back there, please stop.
Please stop talking about that, yeah.
My kids are in middle school, I don't want to think about that. Great, totally understand. Thank you for your time.
All that coming up on The Frame. The upfronts are this week in New York. It's when the TV networks showcase their upcoming lineups to advertisers in the hopes of landing a slice of the billions of dollars that all those beer and laundry detergent brands spend every year on commercials. It's also a chance for the media and TV fans to find out what new shows have been picked up and which old shows have been renewed or canceled. CBS took the stage today to present its lineup. It followed a massive presentation by the Walt Disney Company yesterday about its TV offerings. Those Disney channels include ABC, FX, Freeform, and ESPN. We called up Daniel Feinberg, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, to learn more about what the different networks are talking about. And he started off by discussing the broad range of channels that Disney showed off.
I think the thing that they were trying to emphasize was, oh my goodness, look at everything we have. It was all about the portfolio. It was all about the suite of programming destinations. So the words that they kept using at the beginning were all these words that emphasized breadth and scale and diversity of options. So it was more about the intimidation factor of it, I think, than anybody having any one or two shows that look like they're actually standouts.
On deck today is CBS. It's the first year without their flagship comedy, The Big Bang Theory. So what is CBS facing in the season ahead?
Well, CBS already faced its biggest task this morning when executives had to actually directly answer questions from reporters. And they didn't actually answer questions from reporters in any deeply specific way. They acknowledged, yes, it is in fact different that Les Moonves did not have anything to do with putting together this schedule. They also answered several questions, in fact, a long string of questions about why they decided it was more important to bring back Bull for another season rather than clearing that show, which has faced so much negative publicity because of accusations made by Eliza Dushku about the show's production and star Michael Weatherly, why it was a better idea to bring that back for another season rather than just pushing it off the schedule and moving on with life. The actual presentation, I suspect, is mostly going to be, yes, we're losing Big Bang Theory, but we're going to be just fine because more people watch CBS than anything else, which is entirely accurate. And it's the thing that CBS does every year at the upfronts.
Yeah. And it's worth noting, too, that in regards to Bull, they paid former star Eliza Dushku $9.5 million as part of a settlement related to harassment allegations against the show and co-star Michael Weatherly. So is the answer from CBS basically, we think people are behaving better, but also really the message is people still watch the show and we need a hit?
I believe those are the two messages. The one that they would actually push forward is the, yes, we have HR monitoring all of our shows. Yes, Michael Weatherly has been apologetic. CBS executives actually used the phrase, he's a husband and a father, to explain that what happened with Eliza Dushku was not representative of his ongoing behavior. But yeah, it's not like it's their biggest hit or anything. And it's already had to deal with the fact that Steven Spielberg's Amblin Television pulled out, but CBS wants to continue to be in that business, and they believe they have everything under control.
Yeah, and it's worth noting the husband and father defense doesn't really work when you think about the husbands and fathers like Harvey Weinstein, Les Moonves, and Matt Lauer, who have been accused of sexual assault and harassment. Finally, I know it's unfair. You can't judge a book by its cover, but part of the upfronts are a lot of previews or clips or scenes from upcoming series. As a critic, when you watch so many of these presentations, are there a couple of shows where you say, I'm actually looking forward to seeing more of that? And what shows would you put in that category?
Let's see. I would put ABC's Blackish spinoff Mixed-ish in that category. It appears to be both about racial identity, but also a kind of quirky comedy about a family that grew up in a cult and now is reintegrating into mainstream society. So that seemed like it was slightly different than what I expected. But it's been a couple years since there's been a really good, true broadcast breakout hour-long show, and I'm not sure that I've seen any clips from anything yet that makes me think this is going to be the one. But this afternoon we will see clips from CBS's Evil, which is from the Kings, the husband-wife team behind Good Wife and Good Fight. And so if I were to put money on something that was likely to be out of the ordinary, that would be what I would be looking forward to. You know, you give talented people free rein, and often they come up with fun things.
Well, that raises my last question, and that is that audiences, like creative people, are finding that there is a lot more interesting work going on in streaming services like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon. And I'm wondering if it feels overall, if the networks are starting, even reluctantly and maybe a little bit slowly, adapting to that, or are they sticking with an older model that if you're going to go see something maybe a little edgier and experimental, you go to Netflix, but if you want to see an old procedural or kind of a very standard situation comedy, you're going to stick with us. How does it feel that they're adapting or changing or not?
My instinct would be that it's more the latter, is that they're saying, okay, here are the things that networks do well, and that's what we're going to continue to do. I think the networks have primarily concentrated on trying to chase what they feel are the themes in society, mainstream society, that they think people want. And so there were a couple of years where they thought people wanted kind of rah-rah military patriotic type shows. You look at something like This Is Us, and we've now had 2 or 3 years of networks trying to chase the This Is Us Kleenex market, basically trying to find as many tear-jerking, heartwarming shows as they can. And it's not all that exciting for me as a critic to see that, but I understand how it works as part of their business model.
Daniel Feinberg is a TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter. He's been covering the upfronts in New York City. Daniel, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up on The Frame, one of the pleasant surprises of the year is the Hulu series Pen 15. We'll revisit our conversation with the co-creators and co-stars of this painfully awkward comedy about life in middle school. If I ask you to list the times of your life that you look back on fondly, I'd venture to guess that middle school would not be very high up there. I certainly remember the bullying that I suffered, and I won't even mention what French class or gym was like. The new Hulu series, Pen 15, doesn't put any polish on the pain and awkwardness of those years, but it is still very funny. Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle are the co-creators, writers, and co-stars of the series. They're both in their 30s, but they play 13-year-old versions of themselves in the show. Their friends and classmates, on the other hand, are played by teen actors. Erskine and Conkle met in college, studying theater at NYU's Tisch School for the Arts. They say they first bonded when they met hiding in the bathroom. They'd been assigned to come up with a performance for the day, and neither had anything to offer. I spoke with them when the show launched about how their friendship later turned into a creative partnership. Here's Anna Conkle.
I think in that moment it was really more, are you terrified? I'm terrified, and connecting through that. And as time went by, there was definitely just a similar point of view. We're both oversharers. We both find comedy in sad things and our trauma and shame. And that was a relief to meet somebody else like that. And it felt... She's so funny. Maya's so funny.
That's how I felt about you.
And honest. And so, yeah, I was immediately like hoping she would be my friend.
And what was the first meaningful thing you did after school where you were collaborating?
Well, I guess the first thing we did was a web series that, you know, after school, everyone is always trying to come together to create work and make work, but it's really difficult to motivate yourself to get to that point.
Well, we had been saying that we were going to do it every year after school, and you're busy and you're trying to pay your rent. That's, you know, you're trying to just get by. And we made little videos before the web series.
The web series is?
It's called Project Reality.
It's funny you say that. because
we found
some Project Reality.
Oh, no.
This is BFs of Beverly Hills. Let's listen to Project Reality. I think we're going to double your view count right now.
I'm Croatia.
And I'm Tyler.
We were born and raised in Beverly Hills.
Living the easy life.
I guess we're really pretty.
And we're always cold. Life gets pretty boring when you're partying and living it up.
So we thought really, really hard. And finally we realized.
I want to be a fashion designer. Wait, me too.
So we decided to risk it all.
Give up everything we knew.
And move to our very own apartment in a really shitty area.
All by ourselves. To West Hollywood.
I want to cry.
You guys are both blushing.
Yeah, pretty embarrassed.
I haven't seen that in so long. Yeah, I haven't heard that.
We watched that one the least, I think, out of... When we look back.
Well, let me give you some props because it is actually very funny. And I do see in some ways the seeds for Pen 15 of this. The way that you work together, the idea of what you think is funny,
right.
The closeness to actual true life that you're starting to explore. Mm. So how do you go from there to Pen 15?
I mean, I think Project Reality in the web series and we feel like, you know, it's far from what we had hoped it to be, but we really put everything behind it. And that was the first lesson in as people that are more perfectionists and have anxiety. Sorry, Maya, but
I'm not ashamed. Yeah.
Okay, great. And of going like not allowing ourselves to continue to be paralyzed by not being good enough, essentially. And Project Reality, our mantra was like, okay, nobody has to watch this. Can we do this for ourselves to express ourselves? This is something that we feel pulled to do, writing, producing, acting. Maybe we won't like it. Maybe it won't work. Maybe whatever. But I want to make you laugh and you want to make me laugh. Let's do this.
Yeah. And I think even Pen 15 had the same motivation behind it of this is an experiment. We have no idea if this will work. Will it work to have us be 13-year-olds around real 13-year-olds and exploring the topics we want to explore?
We're talking with Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle about their series, Pen 15. Was it critical that beyond the idea for the series that you would play the characters?
It wasn't. I think we were very open to the idea of having other adults play these characters. I think we felt very strongly that it was Maya and Anna weren't going to be played by kids because the concept was something we wanted to push. Obviously, we wanted to play versions of ourselves, and that would be a great vehicle for us. But we were so passionate about the idea that we were content with.
So what does that mean in terms of the content, that there were things that you wouldn't feel comfortable having young actors say or do or think or...
Yeah.
Because they're kind of along for the ride.
They're there, but we really tried to be aware of how, like, when we use body doubles and how we directed it, how our directors directed it, so that the environment itself was very safe. And that in a way we hoped, even though I know we're pushing things a bit visually, that like the audience at times could sit back and rest easy that like, oh, that's an extreme close up. That's a body double's hand. That's, you know, just the idea that it could be that we hoped put people at ease a little.
And I just think that the idea of having adults playing these 13-year-olds, if you had a real kid playing that role, we wanted to show, you know, R-rated moments, and B, we wanted to have the audience be able to have enough distance through viewing this adult that they could relate to and be able to laugh at it, because it's traumatic, and seeing a kid go through it would be far less funny, I think.
When you are in seventh grade, everything that happens feels like it is the worst thing that could possibly happen. It's very hard to have any perspective on the moment.
Right.
When you're adults, you can look back and go, what was I thinking? But when you're in that moment, you don't have that perspective.
It's life or death. Yeah.
It is. And it's horrible and it's soul-crushing and it's heartbreaking and all of those things that go with it. When you have the perspective of age, how does that change the way that you want to reflect upon what these characters don't have the perspective to understand?
I mean, something that you're touching on that we thought was really funny was the idea that the littlest thing can feel like your world is crashing. And for my character, for example, like her hairs in the front of her face being out of place and being obsessive about that there's something sad, but that's also really funny. And yeah, there was sort of in the finding a thong. That's the popular girl's thong, and or just seeing the thong. You know, like I remember that being a moment when I was 13 and seeing that someone had a thong through the top of their jeans and going like, something just changed inside me.
Oh my God.
What?
Heather's wearing a thong.
Oh my God. No way.
Yeah.
Even just the scene with my dad where he's teaching me how to play drums on a laundry basket.
So, start playing.
Okay, just don't say it like that.
I didn't say it like anything.
Yes, you did. Can you just shut up for a second? Because I was about to play and you're messing me up.
Maya, just come on.
I remember going to this carnal place of pure anger and frustration that my dad was telling me how to hit the drums.
You know, let me show you.
This is why I didn't want to do this.
If you
with
can't
you.
Play for me, how are you going to play for everyone else?
I don't know, because not everyone's in like a professional Steely Dan cover band, Dad.
And they never will be if they don't know how to practice.
Oh, no! That's such tomorrow night because of you!
Oh, fine. It's all because of me.
Get out!
Fine. I looked at you wrong.
Yeah, you did!
The scream that I scream is probably a real scream that I screamed with my parents, and my brother edited this part of the show, and he said he had PTSD watching that.
Both of your characters have a lot of crushes, some mostly unfulfilled, but it does ultimately seem to be about a love story about the two of you and about how trauma brings people closer together. So I want to play a clip from early in the season where you find out that Maya, you've been named Eugis, the ugliest girl in school.
I am ugly. I'm a freaking freak. Like, I'm Eugis.
Maya, if Eugis means beautiful unicorn, then yeah, you are Eugis. Then yeah, you are.
No, not. Do you understand? Like, I'm the ugliest girl in school. Do you get that in your skull? Like, to love me is the biggest insult. Like, that's what it means.
Then I guess, you know, I've been insulted the greatest.
It's a beautiful scene, but it's really,
I mean,
I'm crying. But it's real. I mean, it's what anybody that age goes through, mostly girls, because boys don't talk about their feelings at that age. But I'm going to ask you about that scene and why it was so important in the series and what it reflects about the intention of what you're trying to create here.
I think that the feeling of what happens when you are feeling like a reject in your life in any capacity that I think we both can relate to then and now, and what gets you through it. And I think Maya and I were both kind of blessed with a friend at that time, and that still is our friend, that we got to lean on to feel like we were capable of getting through it. And I think had I been alone, I don't know what path I would have taken. It would have been a different path when things got really dark and hard at times, which, you know, that's life. And so we want to honor that.
Coming up, more of my conversation with Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle about their Hulu series, Pen 15. Let's return now to my conversation with Anna Conkle and Maya Erskine. They're the co-creators and co-stars of the Hulu series Pen 15. I talked with them in March as the show launched. Erskine and Conkle are both in their 30s, but they play seventh grade versions of themselves in the show. Maya explained how she got into a middle school mindset.
The costume definitely informs me. The hair informs me. The way I hold myself informs me. But then the more we started to do these scenes, the more we realized, oh, wow. I mean, this was always the idea in our heads, but that the 13-year-old in yourself is very much alive and strong. And so going to these places, going to these traumatic moments felt almost too easy and cathartic. And yeah, and I also, I work really well off of Anna. So anytime I was with her, we made it a mandate that our first scene we filmed together was with each other because we were so informed by each other's work.
Yeah, that was really helpful. And I think, too, you know, it was sort of a scary realization when, yeah, I like you said, that those insecurities that are so exacerbated at that age were so close to the top, and just not needing to reach too far. And for me, like my hand over my stomach, the truth is that as an adult, that is truly what I want to do at all times. I truly want, and that's sad, you know, like I truly want to like hunch over and hide in moments when I'm not feeling my best. And you just learn that like that's not totally acceptable, and you need to like cope a little bit better, you know. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, those feelings, at least for me, like realizing those never really went totally away.
When you were thinking about what this series meant and how you're kind of pitching it around, it's the kind of thing where you would typically get pushback. It's like, do they have to be like that? Do they have to do that? Do they have to talk about these things? What were the conversations you had with people as you're taking this series out to make sure that they were on the same page with you? And what were the typical things you heard in rejection that maybe even convince you that what you were doing was right?
Well, even before we started pitching, because before we pitched it, we had a 15-minute pilot presentation that we filmed as an experiment. And even before that, we went around talking about the idea to executives, and they would just, you know, say, I just don't know how this is going to work. This is inappropriate. You got to have all adults play the kids, or it should be all kids. The idea of you two with kids, I don't see how that's going to work. Or you should have a bunch of celebrities play the guest stars who come in as their middle school selves. And, you know, we got a lot of that.
And the reservations were understandable.
Totally.
And then we're in such beginning stages to try to describe, no, directorially, we're going to do the shots. You know, everyone's like, what? What are you
right.
talking about?
And then when we would pitch it, you know, we only pitched to three places, but definitely one of them, we got a lot of, I'm nauseous, I don't want to go back there, please stop.
Please stop talking about that. Yeah.
My kids are in middle school, I don't want to think about that. Great, totally understand. Thank you for your time.
Episode 3, you guys talk about masturbation and about the shame that goes with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then how, if you actually figure it out, it's not that shameful and it can be a really good thing. So when you're thinking about the things that happen, but also that are instructive for people who might be watching, what were the kinds of messages that you want to make sure that you are representing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that episode was something, and you know, many episodes throughout came from conversations of like, what's my secret? Like, what are our secrets? And we have the luxury that like Maya knows my secrets and I know hers. And so it came from that place of, okay, this is a scary thing to share. We have each other in real life. Let's do it. You know, and that's another reason why not to give these stories to somebody else, because it was like pretty intense at times going through, and funny and fulfilling and all those other things that we were so lucky for. But yeah, I mean, Maya was so brave to do that. And I was so grateful to her that you were willing to like go there.
Promise I'm not a pervert.
I promise.
I swear you won't tell anyone.
Oh my God, I swear. You swear too.
I swear. Yeah.
I felt very strongly, and I'm thankful to you as well for supporting me in it, of just sharing that story, because I felt so alone, and I still to this day feel alone in it because no one talks about it. And, you know, I just wanted to normalize the conversation around it.
And like in real life, in my middle school years, I wasn't masturbating, but there was a rumor that one. No, I wish I was. I was missing out. Are you kidding? But there was a rumor that went around about me that I was, and I was like, I felt crippled. I felt, but also I was harassed. I mean, as a lot of us are, for
slut
it.
Slut shamed.
Oh, yeah. Like there were signs put up. There were like, I was a slut. And then with guys, it was like funny. It was fodder. So it was really exciting to me. Maya was so honest and funny with it also, that like she was willing to make it real and funny.
Let me ask this last thing. There are obviously physical things you do to make sure that your young actors aren't put in situations that they might be uncomfortable. There's a kissing scene where I think you use a double. Were there any scenes emotionally where they felt they needed to have some guidance, or where they had ideas about how kids their age might react in that situation?
We tried to talk through things a lot, probably. And you know that age, like no one wants to talk through things.
Right.
So it was
right.
like such a weird, I felt like their parents. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember even there's just a scene where Taj Cross, who's an amazing actor, he plays Sam. He's supposed to look at my character as if he's falling in love with her. And I had to pull him aside and have a conversation before to just make sure he felt comfortable with it. He understood it. It was just acting. And he was so wise and hip to it. He's like, I got it. Yeah. It's good.
And he looked, and he did it.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm so sorry you're looking at my face. Please imagine someone else that is in your class. And, you know.
Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle are the co-creators and stars of Pen 15. It's on Hulu now. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Oh my gosh,
thanks for having us.
Thank you. Listen
as your day. And that is it for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counted. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be